It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of cannabis, and have your specific questions answered by emailing jennifer@cannabama.com or text or call 343-0106. And now, for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Jennifer Boozer Stewart, your host. We are here every Monday night on FM Talk 106.5. For Sweet Home Cannabama, we've been doing this for over 6 years, so if you're new to the show, welcome, welcome. And if you've been with us for a while, we thank you very much. Want a reminder that we are doing a fundraiser for the show. As you know, Cannabama was the sole financial provider for the show over the last 6 years, and we closed the business on June 30th because of HB 445. And so we are taking donations via Cash App and Venmo. We will put that in the comment section. And if you would, even a dollar, if every listener gave us a dollar, we would be able to run the show probably for the rest of the year. Last week didn't go so great. So if you think that everybody else donated, they did not. So we appreciate any help you can give us. The work we do here is very important to the cannabis and the hemp industry in Alabama as well as nationwide. And we need to keep this ball rolling, especially given that it's an election year. Couple things tonight. It's my daughter's 18th birthday, so I want to say to my sweet daughter, Bella Boozer, happy birthday. I'm trying not to be upset about it, but she's 18, and oh, don't we all remember 18? So thank you in advance for saying happy birthday, Bella. I love you, honey, and I can't wait to give you this cake after the show. Sad news, Freedom CBD, my friend Sonia Lowry, I'm sure she's watching right now and listening, but she is closing her store this week. So I wanted to announce to our listeners, we've been promoting Freedom CBD for a long time. She's one of my very dearest friends in this industry. And unfortunately, her shop is closing this week. So if you are in the Tuscaloosa area or you follow Freedom CBD and Wellness on Facebook, order something from her. Go by her shop and see her. Help her get rid of her displays and the things she's trying to do so that she can figure out her next moves. And keep calling and emailing your legislators, your senators and your House reps. Call them. Tell them this is not okay. You know, tell them about your favorite store that's gone out of business and how you can't get the gummies that you got 2 months ago for your chronic pain or your MS or your cancer or whatever it is that you were using it for, and that they need to repeal HB 445 in the 2026 session. The ABC board public comments, I did get an address. It's different than when there is a bill and you can just click on it and go and make public comment. You have to email a public comment in about the new rules and regulations related to HB 445 to the ABC board. They are taking comments for 45 days. We're already well over a week into that. You can email them at legal@abc.alabama.gov. That's legal, L-E-G-A-L, at abc.alabama.gov. And tomorrow's a big day across the state because mayoral elections are happening all over the place. We want to wish our friends who are running for mayor in various cities. The mayor of Springville is running for re-election, Dave Thomas. He's a good friend of the show. He has been a guest a couple times. And, of course, Mayor Woodfin in Birmingham, who is endorsed by the Alabama Cannabis Coalition and by this show for mayor in Birmingham. And if you thought the mayoral race in Mobile was interesting, well, you've been missing it in Birmingham because I think they have 4711 people running for that spot. But I cannot imagine anybody but Mayor Woodfin stands a chance. So we wish him the best of luck. And in Mobile, like I said last week, you know, we've been trying to vet all of these candidates. And so the Alabama Cannabis Coalition has contacted all four mayoral candidates. Connie Hudson and Paul Prine have not responded at all. Barbara Drummond responded in a way that lets us know, yes, she is a prohibitionist. I already knew that. We already knew that because she voted yes for HB 445. So if Barbara Drummond is your representative, maybe give her a shout out and tell her that was not okay. But we know that she is not a pro-cannabis candidate. And just with the interview with Spiro Cherry-Gottis, from my friend James's podcast, where he said that that HB 445 was a bad thing, that it should be regulated and not just banning total products. And he never would agree to endorsing decriminalization for the city of Mobile because of a lack of a legal market. And our response to that was, well, we had a legal market. So I guess Spiro's going to get my vote because he's the least prohibitionist. But yeah, that's about as much of an endorsement. I also invited him on the show, and he said he would get back to me, and then he didn't. So good luck tomorrow, mayoral candidates, wherever you are. I don't know about any of the other guys. I just know about these guys. I want to go ahead and read the bio of our guest. This is my first candidate who is running for national office. I've had everybody from the gubernatorial candidates, state reps, and state senate candidates, mayoral candidates, sheriff candidates, but we've never had anybody running for national office. So I want to give you his bio. Mark Wheeler, Alabama's Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate, whose life story embodies the grit, perseverance, and fighting spirit of the people of Alabama. Mark grew up in Alabama facing hardships that shaped his determination to fight for opportunity. His mother battled untreated mental health issues and struggled with substance abuse, while the family lacked the resources to provide the safety nets that many take for granted. His father and stepfather both are serving life sentences in prison for separate murders, leaving Mark to navigate childhood without the support of a father figure. Mark often went to school hungry, uncertain if there would be a roof over his head when he returned home, and relied on social programs to survive. These experiences gave him a firsthand understanding of poverty, family instability, and the obstacles that prevent children from achieving the American dream. Rather than let those circumstances define him, Mark used them as fuel. As a young adult, Mark worked more than 70 hours a week in labor-intensive job with mandated overtime while sleeping just 4 hours a night to put himself through school. I worked three jobs, Mark. I can relate. Man, that's tough. Over 7 years, he earned a degree in chemistry and emergency management, equipping him with the skills to address some of Alabama's most pressing issues, from infrastructure to public safety to economic opportunity. These experiences taught him the value of persistence, resourcefulness, and hard work qualities that make him uniquely qualified to serve the people of Alabama. His vision for Alabama is rooted in the belief that no child should face the struggles he endured, that hunger, homelessness, family instability, and lack of access to education and healthcare should never define a life. Mark's platform addresses the issues that matter most to Alabama families, expanding healthcare access and ensuring no family first faces untreated mental health or substance abuse crises alone, modernizing infrastructure to connect rural and urban communities, reforming Congress with term limits, banning stock trading for members, and overturning Citizens United so government works for the people, not special interests. Promoting economic equity and education, ensuring working families have the opportunity to thrive. Alabama built Mark, and now he wants to build Alabama to protect our children, strengthen our communities, and create opportunities for every family in the state. He is asking Alabamians to meet him halfway, get to know him, challenge him, and join him in the fight to bring real change to Washington. Mark Wheeler's journey is proof that when Alabamians come together, we can overcome adversity, rise above the odds, and achieve the ability to dream. This is his time to serve, and he invites everyone to be part of this historic effort. Everybody, Mark Wheeler, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jennifer, thanks for having me on.
I know we're getting ready to go to a commercial break, but I just wanted to introduce you because I read your bio and I thought that's kind of long, but it all needed to be said. You know, we spoke just before the show, and I've had similar experiences in my background growing up on free lunches and getting the lights cut off and substance abuse issues with my dad and whole sides of my family, you know, that never knowing what's coming next and, you know, how am I going to have a car when I'm 16 or how am I going to go to college if I can't pay for it, working three jobs and having to just kind of bootstrap life. So I appreciate you being so open and honest because not everybody wants people to see the darkness in their past or skeletons in their closet. And I think it's really brave for you to just put it out there like that. I appreciate your honesty.
No, thank you. And no, I appreciate that too. And you're right. It has been exceptionally hard to be so open with it, right? It's one of those things that is still taking time for me to come to grasp and or come to grips with and be able to be so open and so transparent with the public. But I knew going into this that if I tried to hide it, it would be the death of the campaign.
There well, of
no
course.
Opportunity for me to move forward. And right. So it only made sense that I would be clear and transparent and honest with people up front so that they knew where I came from and why I stand the way I do.
Right. And I think that more people than not in Alabama can relate to that. When we come back from the break, we're going to have a great conversation with Mark Wheeler running for U.S. Senate in Alabama. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody. Tonight we're talking with Mark Wheeler, who is running for U.S. Senate. Let's go ahead and get into your platform, Mark. We just heard a lot about your history. And again, let me say that I think that you, people like you, people like me, there's lots of us that literally came from little to nothing. But I wasn't raised in Alabama, so I can't claim this. I mean, Louisiana's not any better, but still, you were born and raised in Alabama in those conditions and still found a way to better your life. So it is possible. You know, it is possible, even in the terrible conditions that the state of Alabama is in. And I don't know how they are now compared to when you were coming up as a child, because I don't even know how old you are, but I'm ancient. I'm from the 1900s. But you know, it's, I don't imagine it was super prosperous and now all of a sudden we're poor. That's not the impression I get. And I have been here for 21 years, but I think it's a testament to the fact that, yes, there are ways to do it. Just you know, I like I said, I commend you for your honesty. When we spoke earlier, I've always been very open about the fact that I'm in recovery. Initially, that was hard for me. Just like you, I worried people will judge me, they will discount me, they will just stop listening, and I won't ever get a chance. And that just wasn't true. And weirdly, I think people respected me more because I could admit it. And that's not who I am, so I'm not ashamed of it. And I get the impression that that's how you feel, you know. Yes, this is where I came from, but it doesn't define who I am, and it did not, you know, for all of its trying, keep you from becoming a successful, educated person who has the capability and the wherewithal to do something like, ironically, Spiro for mayor is calling my phone. I can't even make that up. He must have heard what I said. Anyway, well, that threw me for a loop, Mark. This is live. It's real honest, so forgive me. But anyway, you know, we do recover, you know, whether it's addiction or your own or your family members, the people that were in charge of raising you and taking care of you, you know, that has its own repercussions in shaping who we are as people. And I think that more people in Alabama should, you know, running, especially running for office. Hey, I'm a real person, because Lord knows we are sick and tired of the theater. Especially in state government and all these elections, it really turns my stomach. So I commend you. But let's get into it. Term limits. I'm a fan.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I think most people are. Most people that I talk to, even on the Republican side of the aisle, they'll hear that I'm a Democrat and they're immediately turned off. And then we start talking about policy that I care about. Mm-hmm. Term limits comes up and immediately they're sold. Oh, that's incredible. I want you. I didn't think a Democrat would ever support that.
Right.
And for me, I think from my perspective, it is an absolute necessity if we want a legislature that represents the working people of America.
I agree.
Not just Alabama, but the United States at large.
Right.
If you go into office and you, once you're there, if you're able to establish yourself as a survivor within Congress, you have limitless power for the rest of your life. You have the best health care in America for the rest of your life. And you don't have to deal with the repercussions of the decisions that you make while in office.
Right.
So crafting term limits absolutely places members of our legislature in a position where they know that 12 years later, when they are term limited out, they will be an average Joe again, and they have to live with the decisions that they make.
Right.
And they no longer have the power to overturn those.
Right.
So, yes, term limits are an absolute must.
I agree, because the worst damage I see happening, especially, you know, like I said, I'm entrenched in state politics by force. I don't want to be in the middle of all this, and I don't even want to know sometimes. But now that I know, right. It's like I can't look away. But the worst things I see happening are coming from people who have been there 30, 40 years. Even one guy out of Birmingham, 50 years he's been in office, and he got indicted for embezzling $400,000 from a kid's sports fund. And I'm like, do you think that's the first time he did that or the first time he got caught?
More than likely the first time that he got caught.
You know, I think that they become numb to the need for voter approval, especially in Alabama, where nobody runs against anybody.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm looking at it from both sides, because I see a whole lot of Republican stuff. And then now I see a whole lot of Democrat stuff. And it's like none of the Democrats are great at raising money. Nobody supports their campaigns. I'm sure, you know, I know you're not really trying to raise much right now, but you will have to eventually. Then you've got somebody like Tommy Tuberville, who's got $5 million. Why do you need $5 million to run for governor?
Well, when you're not a great candidate, you have to have extra money.
Right. Well, what do they use it for is what I want to know. I mean, commercials don't cost that much, do they?
I mean, you can find all kinds of ways to spend it and to spend it. But for some of them, there are loopholes to get the money out and put it in your own pocket, right? There are methods.
I am sure. And you've got the AG candidate who's getting $1 million donation out of Tennessee. That's the type of money you don't get to know where it comes from or how or why. Right. And her response as the, you know, wanting to be the leading lawyer in the state was, well, it's not illegal. Everybody else is doing it. Is that the bar?
Right, but just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right.
It doesn't mean it's moral or ethical. I agree. And why would we want to hand over that kind of position to someone who flippantly brags about it? You know, like, well, it's not illegal. Well, let's make it illegal. I mean, that's a campaign donations in Alabama are out of control.
Right. I agree 100%. So overturning Citizens United is something big on my platform, and that'll help fix this issue in general. It puts the power back in the hands of people and not in corporations.
What is Citizens United? I don't know what that is.
Okay, so Citizens United is a Supreme Court case from years and years ago.
Okay.
And really compressing the details here, it basically says that companies are people and that their money is equivalent to their First Amendment right. So they can use their money to spend their money on a candidate or are promoting a candidate without limit. And because they have an unabridged First Amendment right to free speech, that Supreme Court case gave them the ability to spend however much they want to promote certain political ideologies or specific candidates.
Right.
And as
a corporation, not just as a private citizen. Right.
Yes, exactly.
And why else would a corporation donate money to a campaign? Except to get favor with that candidate. Well, then you're bought and paid for. People don't give you $1 million of dark money from Tennessee and then never ask for anything in return. I'm sorry, that's not how this works.
No, absolutely, 100%.
So who will be, you know, who would be the attorney general? Would it be her or would it be somebody in Tennessee? Or who else, who knows where? You know, that's not cool. That is not okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, if we go the route of draining money out of politics, if we actually get the political sphere back in the hands of the American citizens, I think overall we will see a massive change in the way that the law is handled, but also in the way that we're represented.
Right.
You won't see businesses so overwhelmingly represented in the government. You won't see legislation laws coming out that more favor companies over private citizens, right?
Right.
For us to fix the issue, glaringly, everything that's wrong with our economy starts with getting money out of politics.
Absolutely, because, I mean, like I say, it's pay to play. And if you're a normal citizen with a servant's heart who has a passion for the people of their community and you want to run for office, but you don't have corporations banging down your door with million-dollar checks, you stand no chance, and so it's not even really a competition. It's not whoever has the most money gets the seat. And why not just sell the seats at that point?
Well, so realistically, what we're running into here is it's a name recognition issue, right? Mm-hmm. So Tommy, talked about Tommy Tuberville and his $5 million a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
With that $5 million, he can funnel some of it into his own pocket. But more likely, what they will do is spend that money to constantly drip you images of his face, clips of his voice, and posters with his name on it. And the more you see him and the more good feel they give you about him, the more likely you are to vote for him.
Right.
You don't care about his policies anymore because you look at him and you feel good.
Right. That's and, like he was just with the veterans group the other day and with this group and that group. And I'm going to run the state like a football team. War Eagle. You know, like
that's what we need, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, like I say, Alabama likes to succeed at three things: football, oppression, and poverty. And he's got one. And if he takes his $5 million and uses it to drip happy face to us, I don't think that he has good intentions for us to get out of the oppression and poverty business.
100%. I agree with you.
And sorry for all the War Eagle fans out there, but come on now. It's not exactly Nick Saban, is it? Roll Tide.
Right.
I said that for my husband's benefit.
Yeah, there you go. No, I can appreciate that.
Okay.
But no, you're right. Politics is not football, and we really have to get back to a political sphere.
Well, and politics aside, there's politics, and then there's running a government. Okay,
yeah,
we could do without the politics altogether and just run the state, run the country. And you know what I mean? And if you're going to be a public, in my opinion, if you're going to be a public servant, it should be service. You know, you get in, you do a limited amount of time. You don't get paid for it because it's public service. You don't get to bilk off the government for the rest of your life. But then when you leave, you can get those $100,000 speaking gigs and go back to your law firm or your medical practice or whatever it is you do and go back.
Right.
It's public. It should be public service. If you take the lobbying money and we got beat to half to death with lobbyists in this session here in the state, I cannot imagine the exponential pressure on the federal level with lobbyists. I cannot even imagine it, you know, because that's the whole country. That is money. That's stupid money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But with a candidate like me, at least you know that I can't be bought.
Because
I don't have ambitions for a Lamborghini or a giant McMansion or anything like that.
Right.
What I want is to build a world where I know my kids will have a job when they grow up, where I know that they're going to have clean air and clean water and healthy food and that they can have children of their own.
Right.
And
maybe even deliver them in the same county that they live in. And then take them to the pediatrician in the same county they live in. But 23 out of 67 don't have either. You know, that's where we start. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk more with Mark Wheeler. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now, with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back to the show tonight. We're talking with Mark Wheeler, who is running for U.S. Senate here in Alabama. Mark, let's move on a little bit in your campaign platform and talk about economics. Infrastructure and innovation, what does that mean?
Oh, so America's falling behind the rest of the world in infrastructure and technological innovation. For me, in my tenure as your United States Senator, I will absolutely be pushing for infrastructure development, redevelopment, really. So in my platform a lot, you will hear me talk about ultra-high-speed rail. I think the United States should be connected with ultra-high-speed rail. The rest of the developed world already has this. We're behind. When we develop that out, we can, at the same time and for the same cost, we can also develop new corridors for energy transfer, so more electrical lines that are not overhead. They're hidden, so they're not so ugly, such an eyesore. But then also we can build out data infrastructure, too, fiber optic cables. So this brings down your cost for electricity. This brings down your cost for internet. This allows you to commute across the United States more efficiently. So you can get to jobs in bigger cities with less of a commute. You don't have to pay for a car. You don't have to pay for gas. You don't have insurance to worry about. You don't have wear and tear on that car. And you can live further away from cities, so it helps stabilize housing markets across the United States. In my mind, it's a no-brainer.
No, that makes perfect sense. I had no idea what you were going to say, but wow. The high-speed rail thing does make sense. I mean, we're over here in Mobile patting ourselves on the back for the little Amtrak that goes 150 miles to New Orleans, which is great, right. You know, for a day trip.
It's something.
It's something. That's what it is.
Right.
I'm sure it's fun.
So let me tell you, Japan has an ultra-high-speed bullet train now that goes something like 800 kilometers an hour.
Wow.
At that speed, you could transit from New York City to Orlando, Florida in a couple of hours. You could make a daily commute between the two cities and work between them.
Wow.
At that speed.
Wow.
And you could do that for less than $20 a day for the cost of commute.
Right.
So in my mind, it makes absolute sense we should be developing this ultra-high-speed rail infrastructure and not depending. I mean, Amtrak is what it is, and it's functional and it's great as it exists, but right. It can be so much better.
Right. I think it's more like a leisure thing. It's not really a commuter type thing. It's something you do when you want to go between Mardi Gras in Mobile and Mardi Gras in New Orleans, or if you want to go to New Orleans, have lunch and do a little shopping and then come back, you know.
Absolutely.
But that's an hour and a half, 2 hours in the car for people down in here in Mobile. So I think the Amtrak ride is actually twice as long because they have stops along. No, I'm not kidding. I think it's 4 hours because they've got to stop in other cities along the way, you know, Biloxi, Gulfport, you know, the casinos and stuff. They got to hit all those stops with all those different places that you can go to. But high speed rail is fascinating to me. I know even in places like New York City, people commute from a couple of different states by train. Mm-hmm. But imagine if that 2 hour train ride could be 30 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be done. It wouldn't be an issue. And again, at lower cost to the average citizen. You save money either way in the long run.
Right. And you're right about the wear and tear on the car. I moved to Somerdale when I got married a couple months ago. So now it takes me almost an hour to get here to do the show or to, you know, take my daughter to school. It's like another hour there, hour back. It's the only pitfall to my marriage so far.
I hear that. But no, so with your current drive, every time you hit a pothole, you're having to complain, you're having to yell, "Oh, damn DOT," right?
Right. Oh, and trust me,
you blew a tire.
Right now, I-10 between the Loxley exit and downtown, you know, and the causeway, it's a mess. And it's always under construction.
Sure.
Always under construction. What about education? Let's talk about that.
Oh, Lord, there's so much going on with education.
Well,
so,
we do have one of the highest paid education superintendents in the country here, and we're, 46, 47, 48, 49?
I am less worried about the superintendent and more worried about the teachers.
Right,
I would much rather slash their pay and give the teachers a pay boost so that they're actually making a living wage. Our teachers absolutely should not be having to come out of pocket to pay for supplies for their classroom. I was talking to one of the teachers at my local school here the other day, and they were telling me that they were put on paper restrictions because they don't have enough money in the budget to buy more paper. And somebody in the teachers' meeting raised their hand and said, "Well, can we bring our own paper from home? And so we have paper for the class?" And the principal said, "Yeah, of course, that's fine. Of course it's damn fine. The school doesn't have to pay for it." That's ridiculous.
Well,
our teachers should not be having to come out of there. They're already underpaid. They should not be having to come out of that and spend extra to decorate or to provide materials for the classroom. That is not their job.
I agree. My mom was a 30-year kindergarten teacher in Louisiana. My sister is a fifth-grade teacher. I have a couple of other family members that are educators. And every year at the beginning of school, my sister posts on Facebook her Amazon wish list for her classroom so that she can have the things that her kids need. And she works at a pretty affluent school. You know, my mom always worked with lower income kids in a Chapter 1 K-4 program. And, you know, you were lucky if the kids already knew how to brush their teeth. They never paid their school supplies and all that. And my mama always came out of her pocket for 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know, her classroom kids would get school supplies that they needed, you know, before we would sometimes because they were little kids and there was nothing that they could do. Yeah. All to make $35,000 a year.
Right, which isn't enough.
Mm-mm.
But no, but your mother is the kind of teacher we need. Mm-hmm. But it should not have been on her to have to go that far.
Right.
The system should be providing for her and providing for those students. We're the richest damn country in the world. There's no reason we shouldn't act like it.
Well, right. And in Alabama, I mean, my daughter goes to a high school that has a big old football stadium and an indoor practice facility and state-of-the-art this and state-of-the-art that. And yet, you know, we went to a senior meeting the other day and they were talking about all the different activities and trips and dances and outfits. And I just kept feeling more and more sorry for all the kids in the audience that were like me and like you. I had to work. I paid for my own class ring. You know, my own prom dress, because I had to, you know, and my heart broke for them and the teachers that have to deal with that every day. And you're right. They need money for pencils and paper.
Yeah, absolutely. It's ridiculous. You know, it's funny you bring that up about the class ring. So I still have upstairs my class ring, and the money that was used to pay for it was money that I started earning when I was 14. I started working at Fireworks City, a local fireplace here just outside of Heppen. But I worked that summer. My grandmother was taking me back and forth. When the check came in, it went to her house because I couldn't go to my mom's. Mm-hmm. So she goes and put the money aside for me. And so from 14 until 18, when I was graduating high school, I had accumulated that money. It was, I think, a $700 ring. It was the most expensive thing I had ever bought to date. But I still have it upstairs in my safe.
Is it in a glass case with a light on it? I mean, that's how
No.
I lost mine, unfortunately. Yeah, I lost my class ring a long time ago, but that's how I felt about mine, because it was, you know, I didn't have real jewelry. What are you kidding me? You know?
Right.
I never paid for a school lunch a day in my life.
Right.
Well, what about healthcare? Let's get into that a little bit.
Oh, man, healthcare. So healthcare is broken in the U.S., obviously, right? Mm. It is absolutely driven to profit hospital administrators and to profit insurance companies.
Right.
Neither one of them are acting in Americans' best interest.
Nope.
So in my mind, in my eyes, the absolute best thing that we can do is create some real competition for health insurance companies and create a public payer option. I grew up wholly dependent on Medicaid. Mm-hmm. I would be dead without Medicaid. So I know the value of public insurance.
Right.
So if we can create or expand Medicaid or Medicare to offer to the public at large, we loop in dental, we loop in vision, because those are parts of your body. They should be included, right?
Right.
Right, 100%. And then we offer that as an option to the public. And we make sure that every American is automatically enrolled in that plan. And if your employer wants a secondary plan, they can offer that. But they have to compete and be good enough to beat out the public option that we offer through our tax system.
Right. Well, and it's funny because I know I would be dead without Medicaid. When I had my second child, if I hadn't had Medicaid, I would be dead. I would have bled to death in a hospital with no coverage. And so I get that. My Isaiah is sitting right here next to me. We were on Medicaid when he was born because we were poor. And we qualified. And so I know that I don't have health insurance now. You know, with my business, I still couldn't afford $700-$800 a month for one person. And now that my store is gone, I certainly can't afford it. And so that's scary. I'm 47. I'm not 16 and spry, you know, and things happen. And it is a very scary reality to not know how I would weather that financially if something major were to happen. And that's a scary place to be. And I cannot imagine having had both of my children like that and not known how that was going to play out, not known that my son in the NICU would be kept on life support, you know, by Medicaid. If we didn't have any of that, it would have been so much worse. And private insurance is disgusting. It's disgustingly expensive. And it's so out of reach for so many people. So I do think we need to take a hard look at that. When medicine became for profit and Big Pharma really blossomed, when the Controlled Substances Act was put into place and you could only get pharmaceuticals from certain people licensed through the government all of a sudden, you know, we got sicker and slower and dumber and more diseases nobody's ever heard of in the last 30 years than you could shake a stick at. You know, we've got more access, more information, and more technology than ever before, and we are dumber, slower, sicker, fatter, and terrible health. You know, and our lives revolve around pills.
Yep, 100%. It's all by design. They absolutely treat us like cattle to milk us for money, to milk us for labor, to milk us for value. And that is not what the American dream was built around. So, Jennifer, I'll tell you, anything that is directly adjacent to life or liberty should not be privatized. Prison right. should not be private. Health insurance should not be privatized. Nothing in those adjacent sectors. Because if we already allow those things to be privatized, the next step is a privatized justice system. Yep. We're already going that way with arbitration being offered, you know, for like with companies like Amazon, right? If you have a dispute, go through arbitration.
Right.
I could see a future 20, 30, 40 years from now where arbitration can suddenly peel out criminal penalties because the justice yeah. system can't keep up.
Yeah.
And if we allow it to go that route, that's where we'll be.
Yeah, I agree. And legal stuff, too, like small businesses. Nobody stands mm-hmm. a chance out here. By the time you realize that something has gone wrong in a business relationship and you have grounds for a lawsuit, A, you're in a bad position already. B, you can't yep. afford to sue, so you just have to eat right. whatever happened. And if you lose everything, yep. so what? Because the law is not going to help you or protect you, and no lawyer yep. will represent you without being paid upfront massive retainers and hundreds of dollars yep. an hour.
Yep. You know, or if they do, and you get a settlement, it's what 33.3% of whatever your winnings are, or I say winnings, whatever you're awarded, a third of it immediately gone.
It depends, because with wrongful death and medical malpractice, like what happened with me mm-hmm. and my son's death, 40% mm-hmm. to the lawyer. When we come back from the break, 40%. Cool. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk more with Mark Wheeler. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sweet Home Cannabama. Every Monday night at 7 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5 on our YouTube page. We're on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, all the things right now. And hit that share button, y'all, if you know somebody who would like to learn about Mark, who wants to learn about the plant. All the things that we do here on the show, share that on your social media and invite a friend. Mark, let's talk about cannabis. Before we run out of time, just having a good time. Question number one. Do you believe cannabis legalization should remain a state-level decision, or should the federal government step in and set a national standard?
So I am running for a federal law. And my view on cannabis is that it should be wholly legalized and then regulated in the same way that we currently regulate tobacco. My only complaint, my only issue, and the only thing you might disagree with, I think that you
That's
might
okay.
disagree with me on, is the smell of cannabis is very odorous, is very loud, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in that one regard, I would want some restrictions on use in public space. I don't care if you have it in a cookie or a tea or in a vape, as long as I can't damn smell it two blocks away.
Right. Well, I mean, that's so kind of how they deal with cigarette smoke. You know, don't smoke within 10 feet of the entrance of a building or whatever. There are designated smoking areas in public places. You can't even smoke in a cigarette in a hospital parking lot. You know, there's restrictions on that. That I think people are okay with. They understand that. You know, ultimately, when you're outdoors, I'm going to argue with you on that.
It's a little different.
But when people are trapped in a confined space or right outside of a building, I agree with you. They shouldn't be slapped in the face with it. Because I'm not a smoker, so I don't enjoy the smell of it. And so I will concede that. I will concede that, yes, you shouldn't just be blowing it directly into the doors at Target, you know, when people are coming out with their children. Have a little decorum and respect. So. But I do Absolutely. I do agree about, you know, the fact that it shouldn't be regulated worse or more stringently than tobacco or alcohol. With many states moving toward legalization and decriminalization, where do you stand on removing cannabis from the federal Schedule One? Now, let me preface that with it's Schedule One, and the big topic right now, because somebody went to a dinner with Trump and said he mentioned he might do this, but every president for the last several has said this same thing. Rescheduling to Schedule Three versus descheduling it altogether, which mm-hmm. would basically decriminalize and legalize it. Where do you stand on that?
I'm all for just descheduling it, period. So I've been around people that smoke pot. I've been around people that have done heroin. I've been around people doing hash and meth and everything you can imagine.
Right.
There's nothing coming from marijuana that is an issue in the same way that those other drugs are. There are drugs that do need to be scheduled. There are drugs that do need to be regulated because of the physical effects and the types of withdrawals that you can suffer from them, the risk of OD and such.
Mm-hmm.
But with marijuana, none of that really exists. It's no more addictive than watching TV or playing a video game.
Right.
And so I say that to say, in my mind, it should just be descheduled.
Yeah.
And I would vote for that.
Well, and let me take this opportunity to explain, and I'm sure you know this, but for the audience, rescheduling is not a baby step. It is not a, well, it's progress. No, it's not. Rescheduling will do one thing and one thing only. Besides making it more available for research, so would descheduling, giving current cannabis businesses these tax ability to be taxed and to have financial services and all that. But rescheduling literally hands it on a silver platter to Big Pharma. And you will have to have a pharmacy license to be able to use distribute medical cannabis, grow it, process it, sell it. So the existing cannabis industry, especially there's 40 legal states now, that existing mm-hmm. infrastructure would go away immediately. It doesn't make it less of a felony. It does not legalize it federally. All it does is take the power from the states that have medical programs, and it gives it to Big Pharma nationwide. That's the only thing. You can still go to jail for having it, and the only place you'll be able to get it is a Walgreens or a CVS, and where you get your Sudafed to make your meth or your pain pills that you sell to your friends on the street and all the other sugar and soda and alcohol that those places sell. It would decimate the current industry as it is and hand it to Big Pharma. And I assume that is something you're not a fan of?
No, I'm definitely not. For-profit pharmaceuticals is obscene.
They're the ones spending the most money lobbying.
Oh, I'm sure, 100%. I'm sure they've seen a decline in their sales, right? Which in my mind, they should be looking at it like sales, but I know they do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just like the patent, the initial patent on insulin, right? The man that developed insulin sold the patent for $1 because he wanted it to be free for everybody to use.
Right.
And now pharmaceutical companies will mark, $50 a month, $100 a month, $500 a month in some instances.
Right. And there was even a shortage.
Yeah, which is obscene. There should be no shortage. We can make it's not hard to make. We
it's
can make
saline,
it
right. Yes, essentially it's salt water. Okay, do you support expunging federal criminal records for nonviolent cannabis offenses?
Yeah, 100%. So in my mind, once you have served whatever sentence or penalty that the court has delivered to you, it should be over and done with. It should not be public record. It should not be something that balances you against a job. Employers should not be able to see that, with the exception of some violent crimes, because if you are a violent offender, now that should probably be public.
Of course,
right?
If there's a weapon
or
involved,
offender, right,
or you've hurt someone, of course, you should serve your time for that in and of itself. And that should follow you.
That should follow you.
If you've been violent or you've hurt someone or killed someone, that should follow you. But not having a bag of weed or even selling a bag of weed.
No, absolutely not. Or even something petty theft, you're not trying to hurt somebody. You stole food from the grocery store because you were hungry, or you've made micro concessions until you've got to a point where you'll steal toys for your kids' Christmas or something, right?
Right.
Desperation makes people desperate. We manufacture criminals by putting people in poverty and making them live there for eternity, basically.
Right.
And so we can solve that. And that penalty should not carry on for the rest of somebody's life.
Right.
If we want to turn America around, it starts by giving people a second chance.
I agree. What is your stance on allowing veterans access to medical cannabis through the VA healthcare system?
The same as anybody else, right? I think it should be descheduled and allowed for open use.
Right.
So a veteran's no different. If they need it, they can have it.
I think most of the veterans that I've met are either terrified to lose the pills that they're addicted to from the VA, or they totally reject what the VA wants them to do and thus basically losing out on that health care altogether
right.
because they choose cannabis over the pills and the antidepressants and the Xanax and the opiates and all the things. They have to abandon all of their health care because if they test positive for THC and they're not willing to take those prescription drugs, then those doctors will refuse to treat them. Lots of doctors are that way. They're getting better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But pain management doctors seem to be the worst. But yes, at the VA, I mean, you know, like us, if you have the wherewithal to sign your life away and go and put yourself in horrific situations for the good of the country, then you ought to be able to choose whether or not you would like conventional medicine or cannabis.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. At the end of the day, it's your body, your choice, right?
Right.
So that extends here.
Right. Well, and it's just like vaccinations. You should be able to choose whether or not you choose to get a vaccination. The government should not be able to force anyone. You know, we get a religious exemption for vaccines. You know, my children are unvaccinated. One already graduated high school. One's a senior in high school. They never were vaccinated because of the religious exemption available in Alabama. And that should be the standard. It should also be a standard for a lot of things. If you can give a religious exemption for choosing not to use vaccinations, you should also get one for choosing to use cannabis as a sacrament instead of conventional medicine, if that's what you want. Mark, we're going to run out of time. I want you to tell everybody where they can find you and support you.
So the easiest way to find me is to go to Google and type in Mark Wheeler for F-O-R Senate.com. You just type Mark Wheeler, Heflin, Alabama, and it'll pop up. You'll be able to get everything you need. But once you're there, you can find out about my platform. You can contact me or my staff directly, and you can donate if you are so inclined to do so.
And you're on social media platforms, I assume. I know you've been on TikTok a lot.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm very, very active on Reddit and TikTok both. But you can also find me on Facebook and Blue Sky and Instagram.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark. I wish we had more time to get into this, but I appreciate your honesty and your candor and for putting up with my weirdness.
No, you've been great. This has been awesome.
Well, thank you, and I wish you the best of luck. And you can listen to us every Monday night at 7 o'clock right here on FM Talk 106.5. And next week is Labor Day, so we are taking our three-day weekend. So you guys have a great Labor Day weekend, and we will be back on, I think it's the 7th, 6th, I don't know, first Monday after Labor Day for Sweet Home Cannabama. God bless you, and God bless Alabama Hemp.